Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me the Executive Director of the Children's Museum of the East End, Steve Long. Hi, Steve. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Steve. Just to start off, tell me about the mission of the Children's Museum East End.
Well, in a nutshell, it's all about learning through play. We serve young children. It's, one of my mentors said, a children's museum should be a child's first museum experience. And all children need to play the same way we all need oxygen to breathe.
And don't you think adults also need to play?
You are absolutely right, but
somehow we lost it.
And it's important, not quite as developmentally important as it is for children, but certainly.
That's what they say, because nowadays with kids, a lot of times they're sitting in front of the TV or they're playing with their PlayStation or whatnot. And instead, they're not using parts of the brain, I think. There's been studies about this.
There is a tremendous amount of research that shows that children should be physically active, developing those gross and fine motor skills through playful learning that it doesn't involve screens. And in fact, if you come to the Children's Museum, we don't have any screens.
There's no interactive?
No video interactives, nothing. It's a very analog experience at the Children's Museum.
Wow, that's great. That is wonderful. So how did it come about? How did the Children's Museum come about?
Over 20 years ago, there were 8 moms who were very concerned, living here on the East End, about the lack of educational resources. Back then, you know, the number of programs that the libraries do and other children's programmers, they just didn't exist. And as the story's been told to me, handed down, one of those 8 happened to be in southeastern Connecticut because she had missed the ferry from New London to Orion, and while she was waiting for the next ferry, she found, by accident, the Southeastern Connecticut Children's Museum, and she went there and thought, my goodness, we need a place like this on the East End. And that was sort of the germ of the idea, and it has grown into an organization now. We're serving over 75,000 visitors a year.
75,000, that's amazing.
From an idea that grew out of a bunch of moms sitting around a kitchen table in Amagansett.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. So do people donate to the organization, or is this admissions? How does it sustain itself?
We're a nonprofit organization. About 60% of our income is what they say is unearned income, but we certainly work hard for it. It's donations, it's grants, events, and the other 40% comes through earned income, admissions, program fees, memberships, and you know, we really rely on the generosity of the community to make up that 60%.
Well, I'm sure that the mothers and the fathers that have the children that come and experience what you have to offer, I'm sure they're delighted, and they must be telling people about how wonderful the museum is.
Well, I think what really gets people initially in the door is that they're coming with their children, and what makes people want to be philanthropic toward the museum is when they see the impact that we're making on the local community. You know, we have the East End's only family literacy program. We have a bilingual coding club that actually we're having a fundraiser. Hope you can join us on June 29th to help raise money for really a unique program where families come. The children are learning science, they're learning computer coding, and the parents are learning English. So it really makes an impact on the entire family.
Now, you say computer coding. In what sense? Like they're not programming?
They're learning how to do computer programming.
That's better than our school system.
Well, a lot of the schools are starting to offer that. It's really a tremendous skill, and what the way that we teach it, it's playful. It's not just a hard science. There's such an art and a creativity about it that we really emphasize in our program.
But if you start them young, in a sense, like a lot of people, you know, the parents want their kids to go to college, but the colleges, I feel a lot of them are not preparing the students, you know, for real life. I mean, if you get a degree in humanities, obviously it's good if you go on to get your master's and then your doctorate. But I mean, if that's, you know, or literature, if you're going to go into the educational system, excellent. But what about going out and getting a job? But you're saying you're instilling into the children now something, you know, that's really part of the future and part of the today, you know, is programming. I think it's wonderful.
Well, there is a tremendous need for young people when they go into college and then pursue a job to go into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. There's a real dearth of applicants for those kinds of positions, and especially for Spanish speakers. Spanish speakers are at such a small proportion of the people going into STEM relative to their numbers in the population at large. So if we can inspire young children to say, hey, I'm going to be pursuing the sciences, and we keep at it, and we keep encouraging them in all different kinds of ways, it's going to have an impact. And we're starting to see that with the programming that we're doing.
That is really phenomenal. I think that's great. That's really wonderful. Let's talk about the event that's happening June 29th. What is that?
It really is an opportunity, as you were saying, hey, grown-ups need a chance to play. We are having a whole range of different activities, dancing, drinking, eating, but also we're going to be having programs that we do with kids, but that grown-ups will have fun. Mini golf, stomp rockets.
I'm not familiar. What is a stomp rocket?
Stomp rocket is when you make a paper rocket, and using a soda bottle, you stomp on the soda bottle, and the paper rocket will go up about 30 or 40 or sometimes even 50 feet, depending
wow.
on how
well you stomp.
How well you stomped. And we're going to be having a Jackson Pollock-inspired painting activity where we're planning to have, instead of water balloons, they're going to be paint balloons. They're going to be able to chuck at a canvas and help us create a work of art while you're drinking your CBD-infused cocktail and having a great time. And
when is that again?
June 29th.
And that's a Saturday night, I
Saturday see. Night at the Children's Museum.
Okay, where is that located?
376 Bridgehampton, Sag Harbor Turnpike in Bridgehampton.
So how can somebody, is there a website they can go on?
On our website, you can buy tickets. It is cmee.org, cme.org, and certainly can call us up at 631-537-8250. We can sell you a ticket over the phone.
Oh, fantastic. Steve Long, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher, and we'll be right back after this short break with our next guest, Chris Brody of Crescendo. John Christopher for Real Life, and we're back with Chris Brody with Crescendo Designs. Hi, Chris. How are you today?
Doing good, John.
Thank Great. You. I'm so happy you're here. First of all, tell us about Crescendo. What is the company? What does it do?
Crescendo Designs does technology in homes, which would include everything from audio and video and TVs to lighting control, motorized shades, and remote home control.
One of the things I know out here, it's so great, and people love the outdoors, especially out there on the East End. Do you have any outdoor entertainment suggestions?
Yeah, we actually do a lot of our focus is actually in outdoors today and entertainment. Basics are audio systems, and today they make some really special ones where you can have these little speakers throughout the yard with subwoofers and provide a sound quality you couldn't get outside. This is actually within the last few years. And outdoor TVs and even movie theaters outside are very popular now.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you say outdoor TVs, the salt air doesn't affect them?
No, they're fine. They're actually made for the environment.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You're like almost like a magician sometimes, you know. Now you see it, now you don't. You did a project in Manhattan. There was a 2,500 square foot apartment on Central Park. And you did some Houdini kind of moves on that apartment. Can you elaborate about that?
Yeah, there was a few nice things in that project. One thing was in the living room that overlooks Central Park, we did a fully hidden theater system. So you walk in, it looks like a living room, you press a button and a projector screen and everything come down out of the ceiling, and now you have a theater system. In the bedroom, he has a motorized TV lift where it actually comes out of a cabinet at the foot of the bed. And then a new product that is very unique that we use there is called TrueFig. It allows us to flush mount keypads, outlets, and touch panels in all the walls. So by flush mount, it's literally flush to the sheetrock or wood and doesn't protrude at all, gives no shadows, and it's just a phenomenal look.
Wow. So it's very sleek then?
Yeah, it's very clean looking, and anyone that looks at it or sees it is amazed by the design aspect.
You have something new that just came into your shop. By the way, where is your shop? It's in Southampton?
Yeah, our main, well, we call it the Experience Center. It's in Southampton on County Road 39A. And it's basically a mock-up home that you can walk through and get ideas for your house on what our technology can do for you.
There's pretty a lot of cool gadgets there, I imagine.
Yeah, there's a ton of different things to look at.
There's something that you're offering now called Prima Cinema. Can you tell us about that?
Prima Cinema is actually a new product that we literally installed the first two units last week. And it allows you to watch in your home movies that are in the theater the night they are released. So while that movie's in the theater, it's in your movie theater at your house.
You hear this terminology about a smart home. What does that mean, a smart home? I hear that all the time. Does it mean you have to have an IQ of 150 to go into the home? Or?
To me, most people generally think of that as kind of anything we do with the audio, video, and lighting control in-house where you tie it together. But I go a little further. I think a smart home is one that automatically does something for you. So you pull up to the house and the lights outside automatically go on if they're night. Like it senses you there and does what you want.
You did something, another project in Sagaponack. I would assume pretty much you had carte blanche on that project where you had alligator sofas or chairs. Can you tell us about that? I mean, that sounds pretty cool, having alligator chairs.
Yeah, that was a very high-end project we did there. And the theater chairs are ones that we sell and provided there. And they could be custom done in any material, even designed. We could draw on a napkin, or a designer can, and we could give it to the company and they'll make a product that looks like that in a chair. So we did everything on that, and the designer just provided the alligator fabric.
Wow. You retrofitted a home. Somebody wanted a home theater in their basement. What was it? The ceilings were kind of low on that basement in Watermill. What did you do there and what were the challenges?
In that project, the challenge was the basement ceiling was only 8 feet. And out here, that's relatively low for a basement ceiling. So the client wanted to have two rows of seating. And the only way to solve that was we came up with digging out. Instead of going up like you normally do with a riser, we actually dug out in the basement and went down.
You didn't hit any water or anything like that?
No. It wasn't that far. Only about 8 or 10 inches down.
How do you incorporate your systems into a green home? How does that go about?
Mostly you would probably look at the aspects of HVAC, lighting, shade control in a house where we would kind of be green. On the audio video end, we could turn off power. So if you're not at the home, we could actually use special outlets to totally kill the power to it, not waste energy. And it could also go to using the sun to heat a home or shades to keep it cooler in the summertime.
Do you think your business, is it more busy? Is it in the summertime as compared to the fall or winter? Or has your business pretty much on even keel all year?
Our installation and design aspect of it are pretty steady throughout the year. The summer we get busy with service, though. And between the service and sometimes projects hitting at the same time, it's a little bit busier in the summer.
Are there any other gadgets that you might have in your shop that they're kind of interesting that you might want to talk about?
We have a few things in there that are unique. We have a lot of the stuff we put in the homes, we kind of designed that place to be the ideal setup for what the space was. A unique piece is this. We have this planar window wall, which is actually four LED screens that are almost together to where there's no bezel between them. And you can either watch one large image or put on four different shows at once. Popular aspect or use of that is to put artwork on it in a house. So normally it's just playing different artwork and then you hit a button and it turns into a TV or multiple TVs. And from there, there's many motorized lifts that hide TVs. The Trufig product, which is flush mount stuff, is throughout the showroom.
How can people reach you if they wanted to contact you?
They could either come to our showroom in Southampton, which is on County Road 39A. We also have a sales office in the city, or you can visit us on the web at crescendodesigns.com.
This is John Christopher for Real Life, and we'll be right back with our next guest, Tom Patton. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have as my guest, Park Avenue Appraisals, Tom Patton. Hi, Tom. How are you?
All right. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing wonderful. Before we talk about Park Avenue Appraisals, let's talk about you. Where did you grow up, Tom?
Well, I was born in Queens in the Malbus section. Actually, I was born in Parsons Hospital, which is no longer a baby hospital.
What is it now?
I don't know. Mental. Probably.
That's what I was going to say. Well, they got rid of those, didn't they?
Yeah,
I
mean, back in the baby boomer times, every hospital had to be a maternity hospital. But anyway, so we lived in Malba at the time. And then in the late 50s, 59 or so, we moved to Bayshore. And that's essentially where I grew up. Went to Bayshore High School. After school, I went to Fordham University and studied business there. And had a lot of different too lengthy to mention, probably.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question. Did you get into real estate as in sales? Because normally appraisers come out of sales.
No, I went straight in as an appraiser. You got to remember, when I started back in 2001, essentially to get started in it, at that time we were going through a big refi boom, if you'll recall.
Okay.
So they were in desperate need for appraisers to fulfill the needs of the lenders at that time. So I started as an assistant appraiser, and I just really hit the ground running because there was so much work involved. In those days, you had all of these big appraisal companies that would hire all of these assistants, and then we went out and did the inspections and so forth. So that's all changed quite a bit since the financial crisis in 2008. Which they really put a lot of reins in on.
Right, they put the clamps on you, so to speak.
Yeah, so it really changed the business altogether.
So how did it change it? Because before, I know before the Great Recession, the banks weren't as, what's the word I'm looking for?
Strict.
Strict, right. Thank you very much. I was thinking of other words, but that's
strident in their lending practices.
Exactly.
They're more loose.
As long as you had two arms, two legs, and a head, you were fine.
Yeah.
It's not like that.
Not at all. So, and it really worked out for the better. We had lost a lot of appraisers in that financial breakdown in 2008.
Why so?
Well, because they couldn't survive. There was a slowdown in the amount of work, and you really had to step up your game in order to be very compliant, and a lot of them probably didn't have the, ethical metal, if you will, to continue.
Right.
So I think now, as a result of that, we have a much better breed of appraiser in terms of their competency and so forth. The problem is that we're getting very old. I think the average age is like 57.
So is that new young blood coming into the picture?
Well, that was the other side to the laws that went into effect after the crisis, in that they stiffened up the requirements. For example, in order to get a general appraisal license, which allows you to do both commercial and residential work, the highest license that you can get, you have to have a bachelor's degree or equivalent work.
Not high school?
Bachelor's. You have to have a bachelor's to get it.
You have to have a college education.
To become a general appraiser.
Wasn't aware.
And you need a 2-year associate's degree or equivalent, as they say, coursework to get a certified residential appraiser's license. That's what I have.
Right.
And so they stiffened it up quite a bit.
Wow.
And, you know, the coursework and so on. So from a practical financial view, I think it kind of dissuades new right. people from getting into it, especially in view of the fact that we don't have these big appraisal mill companies to a large extent any longer, so they can't get new work. Right. So this is a problem.
So it's almost like you're saying you're putting in this time, because I don't know how many hours it takes to become an appraiser. I mean, just licensing purposes.
Yeah, well,
it's got to be high.
It's like 2,500 hours.
2,500 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a lot of time.
That's a general.
General, right, ballpark. But that's a lot of time to be
sure.
before you're making any kind of money. And then you come out, you have a license, you get the license whether from the state, and now you need to have some income coming in, which could be difficult
right.
since you're brand new.
So who would be attracted to this business? Somebody that's already perhaps retired, financially set? Then you have to ask the question, why should I get into this racket? You
know? Exactly.
So it may not be financially feasible, right. as they say.
So you have a monopoly then?
Until death do us part.
Well, it looks like you branched off. You started out in Greenport, right?
Well, my corporate name is Peconic Appraisals. I started out as that, and I still do operate on the East End as such. But I was tempted, and I followed up on opening a New York office, which it really is not a manned office. It's just a location
right.
On Park Avenue.
But you can do appraisals in the city then?
Oh, sure.
For co-ops.
And I do.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you believe that somebody, before they buy a co-op or a house out here on East End, that they get an appraisal? Or?
Well, a certified appraisal. Well, first let me just say that brokers can give value opinions as well. It's the reason you need a certified appraisal is for some official reason, typically, among others, but that's the main reason. So, for example, any federally related transaction requires a certified appraisal. If you're going to have an estate being settled, you need a certain, the state will only accept
from a certified, they're not going to take it from a broker.
Broker. Well, some people do submit it that way, but often they get rejected. When the government finds out about it. So, by and large, that's how that occurred. So,
interesting. That's very interesting. I bet you must have some interesting stories, or you have any tales to share with us from the appraisal standpoint. I mean, I know.
Give me a hint.
Okay.
Where do I begin?
Right. Well, it's funny because I know on appraisals, people come back and they say, what was that appraiser thinking? Why didn't they include my basement? I live down in the basement.
Well, often a borrower or somebody that's reading the appraisal who is not familiar with appraisal practice per se may regard certain things. And quite frankly, even many
brokers
right. put, for example, the basement as part of the gross living area, which it's not.
Right.
It's got to be above grade in order to be considered a gross living area. So even though from a practical viewpoint, in many cases, that living space below grade is top notch. And you,
right. you have a wine cellar.
They might have put beaucoup of money into it.
Right.
It doesn't really qualify. So normally, I think the person is unhappy with the value that was given, and they look for
things that would
give them a reason to criticize the appraisal.
Exactly.
That happens. But,
yep. So let me ask you a question. How can somebody, they want to get an appraiser. How can they get in touch with you?
Well, they can call me on my business line.
What's that?
888-843-4141, no matter.
What is that again? One more time.
888-843-4141. And That will get you coverage on Eastern Long Island, the Hamptons and the North Fork, and also Nassau and Suffolk County, and as well in the city.
You also have a website too, don't you?
Yes, www.peconicappraisals.com.
Thank you so much, okay. Tom Patton from Park Avenue Appraisals.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You have been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people, places, and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, broker associate with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life is also brought to you in part by LEAP Compliance, HR's one-stop solution for sexual harassment prevention training and policies. All employers in the New York State are now required to train all employees annually, no matter the size of the company. For more information, discriminationpreventiontraining.com or 646-216-8038.